When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Punk Rock NBA Podcast.
What's up, everybody? I'm Finn McKenty. This is the Punk Rock NBA Podcast. Today's guest is Jack Simmons from Slaughter to Prevail and his merch company, Rising Merch. If you are not familiar with Slaughter to Prevail, they're one of the, rising stars of the new generation of deathcore, along with bands like Brand of Sacrifice. Their latest video, Baba Yaga, is up to like 2.5 million views now in a month, which is amazing for a deathcore band. So we talk about exactly what they did to have that kind of breakthrough moment and how it works with them being partly in the UK, partly in Russia, about running their merch business. Lots of cool stuff in this one, whether you're a fan of the band or not. Before we get into it, there's a couple ways you can support the show if you would like to. Number one, you can share it on social media. Number two, you can buy some merch if you want. And number three, you can support us on Patreon if you really, really, really like us. There's a link to both of those things in the show notes. And with that out of the way, let's get into this episode. Jack, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for making time for this.
Yeah, for sure, man. Stoked to be on. Very stoked.
Cool. Well, yeah, same here. I see you're sitting in your warehouse here. I want to talk to you about your company as well as the band, if you're open to that.
Yeah, of course. Love to.
Yeah. Well, I guess to start with, I feel like, you know, the past few years for the band have, I think, been good, but it seems like really with Baba Yaga, it seems like you've really had a breakout in the past few months, last year or so. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it's sort of, you know, strange our end, because when we put it into perspective of, you know, how long we've been trying to do it for, that it feels like people are sort of finally on the same page as us and it's connecting a bit more, especially when we dropped, I would say, like Agony maybe a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. That's all kind of like start to get the ball rolling for like the new sound we're doing. And yeah, especially with Baba Yaga and Demolisher, it's been, to be fair, really humbling.
Yeah, the Baba Yaga video has 2.5 million views as of now in like a month, which is amazing for, you know, your genre.
Yeah, just stoked, especially to try and I just want to try and bring more people to the genre, you know, try and get people excited about it. Like when I was younger and how fresh it was and everything and how stoked I used to get, you know, that's definitely what we're trying to do.
When is that? Is this like the MySpace years or?
At the very end. So the end of MySpace. So like the bands I really got into was, towards the end of MySpace. It was like in the UK, Trigger the Bloodshed. Do you remember them?
I don't remember them.
Oh, they're brilliant. Yeah, they're really good. They're brilliant. Annotations of an Autopsy.
Uh-huh.
And Ingested back then were like a really fresh face sort of band. And yeah, for sure, like those bands. And then I found Suicide Silence and obviously the more like US or deathcore bands and just sort of fell in love from there and couldn't get enough of it.
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, as I've talked about in my videos, I feel like the genre got kind of a little just flat, you know, sort of formulaic to me. And then I think you guys and Brand of Sacrifice, but really especially, you know, like especially the stuff you guys have been doing lately, just like you're not afraid to be ridiculous.
Yeah. I honestly love you said that. Like we just, I feel like everyone used to have a lot more fun with it.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, it was just as serious about the music and everything, but it was just people, you know, it's an extreme genre. And I think you can be extreme in a lot of ways other than just, you know, blast beats, as much as I love them. Like, you know, I think there's so many things you can do to show, you know, grab someone's attention and show them like, yeah, having fun and just doing over the top shit. Like we just love it. Absolutely love it.
Well, tell me about this video, because this is one of the most ridiculous videos that I have seen. I mean, you got tanks, you got anyone who hasn't watched this, you got to go watch it. There's, you know, Alex wrestling a bear and driving a tank. And I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, when we sit down, the harder we try to think of a video idea, we come up with nothing. You know, we went at every angle and we just thought, especially with Alex, he wanted to represent Russia and sort of play along the stereotypes while actually keeping it sort of his experience. And, you know, at the end of the day, I can't get a tank here to film, really. Right. You know what I'm saying? Right. In the UK, like, it, you know, I'm sure there's some place you can rent a tank out, but it's very Russian to be able to just rent a tank and find a bear, you know, on a pretty small budget, you know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, you know,
who do we know that's got a tank? Oh, my uncle, he can hook it up. We'll just borrow one from the army for a day. They won't miss
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And his next door neighbor's got the bear as well, if you want to include that.
So how did he get the tank?
It was just a contact through the videographer. He just just knew someone that did like tank rides and things like that. Honestly, oh, okay, just like an old Soviet tank, I believe. And he just managed to set it up and it just came together nicely, to be honest.
So you guys were able to travel to Russia?
No, so I wasn't. So I didn't actually perform in the video. I'm just going for the... Basically got a visa now, but where travel's just come to a complete stop.
Who's in the performance parts then?
So we have a guitarist called Dmitry.
Oh, okay. And he's Russian too.
Yeah. So he sort of filled in a few times, you know, before we really started touring and stuff. Like he was filling in for some sort of Russian shows. He's like he's a good friend of the band, sort of, you know, known us from the start. And he's just sort of flew in and jumped on it. I mean, even still, he still had to fly in. It was like a 6-hour flight from one end of Russia to the other just to go do it.
Right. So tell me about how you ended up connecting with Alex, because, you know, being in an international band, that's complicated.
Yeah.
But he is definitely a star in a way that, you know, I think not many people in the genre are. So how did you guys end up coming together?
I'd been in band since I was like, I think about 12 years old. I'm about 26 now. And basically what happened was I was just going through it, you know, in this band, that band, touring and doing all this stuff. And I just saw this video of Alex before. I think it had like 3,000 views or something. And it was just him doing a cover, an ingested cover, I believe. And it's just, I just sort of blown away, reached out to him, you know, not even something serious, just do you want to make some music together. And we just sort of, it just clicked. It felt easier to write with Alex across the internet than I felt writing with, you know, other people in person or in a studio. It clicked so well that we just sort of went, all right, let's do it. Put a couple, you know, put an EP together, put some singles together. And we just took it a day at a time. You know, it definitely was costly. Touring was very expensive from the start, and trying to make things work with sort of visuals has always been difficult. I mean, same for the Baba Yaga video. But we've just honestly just taken it a step at a time, and it's never felt wrong. It's just the whole time it's felt very smooth, you know, and we just try and make it work.
Yeah. I noticed one thing that was interesting is you release a lot of your videos on his channel rather than on the, you know, A Slaughter to Prevail channel. Tell me about that decision.
We really, to be fair, with me and Alex working, I just wanted to kind of give him the freedom, especially with marketing and where it goes and all this stuff, to do what he wants, because his vision's very strong, you know. And whereas I would take more of a backseat on that with, you know, with the imagery and stuff, and I would put more of my focus into the songs. It just felt sort of normal to have it on his channel, to reach his fans as well as grow the band. And I mean, to be honest, that's something we've sort of fought for with our contracts with labels and everything
right,
like that.
Right.
Try and keep it there. There's so many fans of Alex that we want to hear Slaughter, and also bring those Slaughter fans into Alex's channel so they can see what he's doing as well, and sort of just try and center everything a lot more.
It's funny that people would fight about that when at the same time they also pay for premieres, you know, on these promotion channels and stuff. It's like, well, you've got an opportunity for like a free one. Like, why would you not do this?
Oh, yeah, exactly. And his subscribers already like his vocals, you
right.
know, so it makes, to me, it just made so much sense. And I never really properly thought about it, that is like a band, you know, our band stuff is on just his channel, because it just felt so right with it, you know.
Well, people get very precious about this, you know. They're very I don't care, you know, if I was in a band, I don't care where you listen to us or watch our videos, you know. I'm indifferent whether if you want to watch it on TikTok or Instagram or YouTube or Spotify, I don't give a shit. I want to be everywhere that makes sense for the band, for the fans. And if there's an opportunity to get in front of more people by being on one platform versus the other, then I want to do it. And it feels like a lot of bands hold themselves back by kind of coming up with these invisible scripts for themselves. Like, for example, they want to post the link to YouTube on Facebook instead of just posting the video. And it's like, well, why do you care where they're watching?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I think it's almost cutting off your face to cutting off your nose to spite your face. You
right.
know, like,
well, we want all the views in one place. Why?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, like you said, especially with platforms, I think right now we're in this golden age where each platform sort of hits a different target. You know, like I feel that, especially with TikTok coming into it a lot more and just the level of new people you can reach in different ages and everything, it's just, it makes no sense, you know. And I think it's also a sign that the industry in a way is always a little bit slow. It seems to actually keep up with trends and to keep up with getting it out there. And I see other genres, especially like SoundCloud rap and all these other ones, where there's no shame. There's no shame in going viral on TikTok or anything,
right.
Or no shame in using whatever you can, Instagram, whatever it is, to do it. It's just in metal, we have this sort of two cult sort of culture.
Yeah. People are very resistant to TikTok. I don't understand why. It's like, I mean, the audience is there. This is where kids discover music now. So I don't understand why you wouldn't want to be there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There's no point. And I think it should even have the opposite attitude, that it should be something exciting. Like we've been looking at, especially with TikTok and seeing what's going viral. And obviously for us, it's a little bit difficult with the content we're trying to put, sort of kept getting taken off, but just trying to find that sort of groove of it all. Like for us, it's exciting to know that there's a new platform with an obviously younger audience and a younger group of kids that will love the genre or hate it.
But either way, yeah. Get,
but yeah. And that's all we want, you know, is to bring that culture of the scene and everything to these people and try and find, not just find more people, but to really showcase what we're doing.
Right. So you mentioned in the email you sent me, like Reacts as a growth vehicle for you. And there's tons, you know, there's tons of Reacts and tons of, you know, the vocal coach talks about Alex and blah, blah, blah. How has that worked for you guys?
Honestly, it worked just almost too well. You know, like it's sort of like you're waiting for the sort of catch, you know, almost like it for us. It's just did, like, the right people, I guess, did it, or the right song or whatever it was. And every day we're just seeing more and more of them go sort of semi-viral and getting a million hits just on someone reacting to the song already.
Yeah.
Like the amount of extra views we're getting just for those channels was just was brilliant. You know, it really was. I think that was one of the reasons that Demolisher did so well.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a ridiculous breakdown that's kind of just tailor-made for reaction videos.
Yeah.
You know, for somebody, oh my God. You know, I don't personally watch those. I don't really understand the appeal of it, but you know, like you said, there's people getting millions of views on them. So what do I know? Do you ever do anything like with reaction videos in mind, or is that something that just sort of happened?
It honestly just happened. So, I mean, with Demolisher, that track we wrote back in probably 2016, funny enough. And I mean, back then, maybe some people were doing it. I wasn't aware at all of reaction videos, but
I don't think so. Yeah, not really.
Yeah. And I think even like writing now, you know, I'm at the moment writing new, you know, Slaughter Songs. We just finished up the album that's coming out, and it's just, even then, it's never really popped into my mind with songwriting, but I can imagine it will. I can imagine it will affect especially people, younger bands, of how they're trying to get out there. I mean, if you just need one breakdown to sort of go viral and showcase your whole EP or your whole album,
right.
I can imagine a lot of people changing how they're writing for that.
I think so. I mean, look at this Lorna Shore song, you know, from whatever, a week ago, and everyone's freaking out about that breakdown. There's going to be tons of reaction videos to that, and it wouldn't surprise me if they get a similar kind of thing with Demolisher.
Yeah, I can see that happening. I can see that. I think it also, for this, like, for deathcore, you know, I think not everyone's going to sit there and listen to, like, a 3 or 4 minute song. So just to have that sort of, those viral clips kind of get people in to actually give the music a chance is great. It really is.
Yeah, I think it's interesting with deathcore, you know, with rap or pop, the hook I would say, like TikToks, is some sort of a lyric where people can do a thing that makes sense visually. You know, that's sort of the hook. But with deathcore, where, you know, most of the time you can't understand the lyrics, it's the breakdown that's the hook.
Yeah, for sure. Sure. It almost actually reminds me of a throwback to those MySpace days.
Yeah.
Like with the t-shirts used to have with the one liners, and everyone had the one liner.
Where's
like
your fucking God?
Yeah. Every single one. I think Martel Defile, a UK band, used to be doing some great one-liners, like, and that was sort of their thing, you know. And I love that, I really did. And I think that's almost coming back now in just those, yeah, like you say, like with TikTok and those sort of clips like that, they're going viral in the vocals. And
yeah, Suicide Silence were, you know, the kings of that to me. The doctors recognize your face and, you know, pull the trigger, bitch, and all those,
yeah,
you know, they go great on shirts and stuff. And yeah, it feels like with deathcore, people sort of started to take it really seriously for a few years. And now people are like, you know what, actually it was cooler when we had fun with it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. Definitely. And I mean, the band's coming through now. I think for me, I've been sort of more excited about them than I have for deathcore bands in a while. You know, I think we had like a short little bit of time when like Thy Art were coming through, that it seemed to be coming back again. And then it sort of, you're right, like kind of dipped, especially with people getting so serious. And I think people still take like with our music and obviously like the new Lorna Shore track, the music really seriously. It's just that fun aspect, you know, like a horror film, like you're sort of waiting for that moment. And that sort of over the top, explosive sort of crescendo moment that is going to, you know, finish off the song and just, yeah, it's great. It's really good.
Well, I think you guys are showing that there isn't a trade-off between having fun and doing, you know, ridiculous things visually. That's not going to make people take your music less seriously, like you said. I mean, people are into people definitely take the music seriously. They are into it. It's not a joke band, even though you have masks and do the silly stuff in the videos. Did you guys ever feel any tension about that, or have you gone in on that stuff since day one?
I wouldn't say tension. We've sort of been trying to think of, like, especially with the image, like we wanted to put as much work into that as the music. You know, we wanted a full package. We love, yeah, bands like Kiss and obviously Slipknot is a huge like inspiration for us. And even like what Ghost are doing, like those sort of, we wanted to make it cinematic with the resources we had and also true to ourselves and the sort of things we like. And it just sort of came together quite naturally in that way. We did play around with the mask quite a bit at first, like from the first sort of moment, we weren't too sure. Then we weren't sure if everyone should have one, like little things like that was sort of like little roadblocks of where we should take it. And it just sort of, you know, kind of grows with us. And we've been trying to grow it recently, you know, especially for the album and the artwork and everything, and for future songs and what we've got coming up. And especially when touring gets back together, we just want to make it that next level. We want you to walk out like it's a new experience. It's not listening to us on Spotify. It's a full immersive experience of us and the band and everything in between sort of thing.
Yeah. Like I think of My Chemical Romance as being a great example of this, of a band that has like a whole universe around them. There's like lore and, you know, it's almost like being a fan of a TV series or something like that as much as it is music.
Yeah. Spot on. Yeah. 100%. And I love it. Like it kind of like ignites an almost like kind of nerd part of me and that like gets into it. And I like reading it and seeing all the videos and stuff. It's it gets me super stoked and pumped up.
Yeah, exactly. And you want people to talk, you know, like again with your video with the tanks and the bears and stuff, people want to know how that happened. And that just gives them one more layer to dig deeper, one more way to kind of nerd out and be fans. And that's what kids want to do. They just want to nerd out.
100%.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are the Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real, honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.
But first, I want to thank DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. If you're not familiar, DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that musicians use to put their music into online stores and streaming services. So in plain language, if you have ever wondered how to get your music on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Deezer, Tidal, and many, many more, there's like dozens and dozens of different streaming services, DistroKid is the way to do it. It is super easy. I have used it to put my music on Spotify. It took me maybe 5 minutes to like set it up and upload everything. It's legitimately awesome. I am sincerely a fan of this company and their product. And for those of you who have asked, you can also upload your music to TikTok with DistroKid. And if you want a chance to get featured on DistroKid's Spotify playlists, you can do that by submitting a song through Spotlight and getting your fans to vote for you. You can also use Hyperfollow to get more Spotify followers. You can promote your new release as well as Spotify Canvas. That's where there's the video in the background in the player. And when you share it on Instagram, it shares that video too to make your Spotify release pop. And Spotify Canvas is available to all DistroKid artists. Like I said, as you can probably tell from this, like I am sincerely a fan of DistroKid. DistroKid can do everything I just talked about and so much more. So be sure to sign up with my link, which is in the show notes for this episode, to get 7% off your first year. That link is in the show notes of this episode, or go to distrokid.com/VIP/thepunkrockNBA. And thanks again to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode.
So another thing you mentioned is your contract. So you said that you'd signed a contract in the beginning of the band that kind of made things difficult for you, and you've kind of renegotiated that. Tell me about that.
Well, we signed to a label really just thinking that that's what we needed at the time. You know, we thought, okay, we've got this, you know, we've got the songs, well, we believe the songs and all that. And we just need a label to give us the platform. And we started our manager at the time, with, you know, obviously all due respect, much love to him and everything. We were sort of his own only real band. He hadn't had much experience. So we're sort of going into it the same as each other, you know, trying to work it out.
Yeah. But you guys were a small band then too. So
yeah, of course. Yeah. And at the time, you know, this was a great deal. Like the contract we signed, and I still think was a great deal for us at the time. It made sense, you know, but realistically, I think right now bands don't really need a label that earlier on, you know. I think especially for us, you know, like I don't know where we'd be at sort of if we didn't, but it definitely feels that there's so much you can do as a band before you need that, before you need the connections or whatever. There's so much you can do online for yourself, for your brand, for everything. I mean, even music videos nowadays, you don't need a huge budget to make something interesting, to make something exciting, you know. Same with us. I mean, we've only spent a maximum probably $4,000 on a video.
Oh, wow.
$4,000 or $5,000 really.
Wow. And you guys have great videos.
Thank you. Yeah. And that's the thing. I think you just got to get creative with it. It's the same with music.
Creativity is free.
Yeah, exactly. And it's fun. Like, again, it's just having fun with it. It's not just so much.
Spending $50,000 on an album isn't going to necessarily make it a better album.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And we fell into that trap too. You know, we fell into the trap of with our first album of cashing out on everything we could, thinking that's going to be it. We're going to absolutely, you know, just be everywhere, the place we want to be. And then sort of you realize as it falls around you, it's not really about that. It's about, you know, obviously connecting with people. It's about making something genuine, exciting. And I believe if you make something you're excited about, there's probably a certain amount of people, you know, on this planet that is going to be as equally excited as you. And it's just finding those people for us.
Well, a lot of smaller bands, you know, they have this idea that if only they get signed and if only they have a manager, if only this, like they think that there's some sort of magic thing out there where if they sign this contract with this person, then it's all going to get handed to them. And it's just not, it just doesn't work that way. I mean, if you're a little baby band, what is a label really going to do for you? I mean, they're not going to invest millions of dollars in marketing the band because you're a tiny little band. They're not going to give you a ton of money to record because you're a tiny band. I mean, there's really not that much they can do for you.
Yeah, exactly. And at the end of the day, everything also comes with a price. You know, I think bands forget that what you have might not be so valuable right now, but if, you know, if the bigger goal is to create this huge thing, that value is sitting there, you know, the potential value of that. And it's definitely easy to be sold down that street as well. You know, to be sold that if you come with us, we've been given the talk when we were looking at labels, you know, before we signed to Sumerian, like what we were hearing off people and the talks we were having was, well, we'll get you here, there and everywhere. And then as soon as you actually ask them for it in writing, it's suddenly a lot different. You know, what they can, once the sales pitch has sort of calmed down a bit, you know, it is a lot different. And I think bands just sort of need to sort of take that, like, you know, responsibility onto themselves as well and just say, you know, it's a lot of stuff is out there just for you to go and get.
Yeah. Anybody can make a TikTok account today and post stuff for free.
Yeah, exactly. And what I love about the internet really now with all the downsides and everything is you just see bands and artists get big in the strangest ways. Like I was watching one of your videos on Hyperpop and you said it is just a representation of the internet. It's not made to go viral on the internet. It's just sort of the sort of, yeah, it's the mirror self of it. And I think that's a brilliant way of putting it with all of this. You know, you can get big doing or popular, whatever, doing so many different things. And most of them really just come down to being really creative and new. And that's what's kind of seems fresh at the moment is like Hyperpop is this new fresh thing and it's exciting. And I do wonder if it's going to sort of merge into metal at all or something, metal sort of version of that, you know, but it just feels good that people are getting creative again.
It's interesting to me because although musicians think of themselves as creative and are creative, feels like a lot of them don't want to be challenged to be creative in ways that, you know, aren't just playing their guitar. It's like you said, everybody knows that there's all this stuff on the internet, all these ways of getting the word about your music out there. But when you challenge people, it's like, all right, well, then go make a great video. They're scared and they don't want to. And I understand why, because it is scary because you might fail and maybe you're not good at making videos, but that's the name of the game. You got to find a way. And if you can't do it yourself, find a friend who can, or like find fans who will do it or whatever. But like you have to be creative and resourceful and scrappy, and feels like people just kind of want to run away from that challenge and make excuses instead.
100%. Honestly, I couldn't agree more, to be honest. I think so much of the restraints, I think, as artists that we put on ourselves is from our own mind and is from our own, you know, like you say, wanting like validation, but only in a certain way and not wanting to make a fool of yourself or not wanting to, you know, be classed as just a TikTok band or you know, just an Instagram-friendly band because the guy's got tats. Like, I think you just got to see them as positives. At the end of the day, if that makes more people listen to the music, then we've succeeded in that. And if it doesn't, then we'll try something else. And we'll, you know, as long as like you still stay true to yourself and what you're trying to do, I think it's just, you can have so much fun. You know, there's so much resource out there right now. It's incredible. Yet not many people are really taking it for, you know, taking advantage of it.
Yeah. It seems like in particular TikTok, you know, the heavier the band is, the less they're receptive to TikTok, I feel like.
Yeah.
You guys have had some success there. Is that just kind of part of, is that like an outcome of making great videos elsewhere? Or did you do anything kind of to seed TikTok? Or how has that worked out for you?
To be fair, we didn't really ever push TikTok until recently. I started noticing, funny enough, like just rappers and obviously hyperpop artists and all that just connect on this weird level, and songs I heard on TikTok that I'm now hearing everywhere, and it's like, oh, I know that song, you know. And I kind of just thought to myself that I'm surprised there's not been a metal band doing that. And then obviously the more I was looking into it, I was realizing that we had a couple of like reaction stuff that went viral on there, and a couple of other things, a couple of other pretty, you know, funny videos sort of thing, like almost sketch style
right
videos go sort of, you know, semi-viral on there. And we've never really yet pushed it until recently. But I think that if I was starting a band now and I was looking at, you know, what bands are doing, I think it's sort of one of the first steps, just like making a Facebook page or just like making an Instagram. I think one of the first steps is you've got to make that TikTok, pretty much.
Yeah. And I wonder if there's going to be bands like, maybe there are, but, you know, metal bands that write for TikTok the way that I know pop and rap artists do. That sort of they're like, okay, here's the part of the song that I'm going to put on TikTok and pay people to make reactions to that or make dances to this and stuff. I wonder when a metal band is going to do that, because somebody's going to.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I'm surprised it hasn't yet. And I think especially in metalcore, you know, I've not really listened to much metalcore for a while, but I can imagine, especially in that sort of scene, someone doing that, you know, and doing something fresh with that.
Yeah, sure. Somebody will, and they'll blow up, and then everyone's going to realize they should have done it. And
yeah,
there's just so much. I mean, I've complained about this all the time, but you know, I'm gonna allow myself to complain about it again. It's just so much excuse making. It drives me nuts. Like, if somebody does get success on TikTok, then instead of people going, well, fuck, I should have done that, it's like they just make excuses. Well, that wouldn't work for me because of this, or they were only popular because of that. And it's like, well, dude, just take the, like, instead of fucking complaining, take the energy you spent on that and make something on TikTok, and you'll probably feel a lot better about yourself.
Yeah, 100%. And I think people put, they sort of put so much shame around, you know, if you don't get popular via Bandcamp or whatever, or
right,
then you've done it right. You're not the true band, you know, especially in heavy music. What we see, especially, you know, I personally don't really read like comments anymore, but before you just see a lot of trying to compare bands, trying to compare this, if, you know, oh, you're meant to be a deathcore band, why are you doing that? You know, or the one we get a lot is, you're wearing masks, you're just copying Ghost, or you're just copying Slipknot. Like,
as though they invented the mask.
Exactly. And I can't believe more bands aren't doing masks. Honestly, like, the way it connects with our fan base anyway is just like, it's just gold dust. It really is. Just the branding on it and everything is just, it's a lot more than, you know, what I see other bands sort of doing at the moment. And it just seems like such a sort of golden nugget that you could just do that. And it doesn't have to be a mask. It can be anything. It can be, you know, and I think deathcore, we start to have it with the Windbreakers. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
The branded Windbreakers, yeah. And everyone's on stage jumping at the same time.
That's
the
right.
Up and down. And
that, like, Annotations of an Autopsy had that video, right? Where they're all in the Windbreakers.
Yeah. Yeah. Dark Days, I think it was. The Dark Days movie. Yeah. Stage Breaker. That's it.
Yes. I love that one.
Yeah. It's brilliant. And like Oceano do it. And it really worked. And then again, I feel like it just got stale. You know, I think especially in deathcore, a band does something different, and then you've got 20 other bands doing it the next week, and you know, and but no one wants to be the first band to do it until it's already been done, for sure.
Yeah, well, that's how it always is, and then they run it into the ground, and people are gonna find something new. But I do think it is interesting that something as simple as masks, you know, it could be a cape, it could be, you know, that you guys all wear yellow shoes. Like, it doesn't have to be anything amazing. And I think in your case, the mask is not like, you know, some people that take the gimmick so far that it sort of overwhelms everything else that they're doing, you know, like Eskimo Callboy with Hypa Hypa, which obviously did well for them. But in my personal opinion, they took that so far that it makes them seem like a joke band. And if they're okay with that, then, you know, that's cool. But I think most people don't want to be a joke band. And that might be where their like resistance to things like masks comes in. But, you know, you guys have proven that the mask is just this little fun thing that you do that doesn't overshadow everything else.
Yeah, for sure. And we, you know, we love horror films, and it's not like if there's a new horror film comes out, you're going to shit talk. Oh, you know, the main character or the villain or whatever's got this on is sort of what you expect.
Yeah, right. Oh, he killed someone with a knife. Well, I mean, all right. That's not the only movie where someone gets stabbed.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you're right. And there's still awful horror films where it's just gimmicky and it's not actually done in the right way. And I'm sure if everyone started doing masks, it would be the same way. But yeah, it's just, to me, I think there needs to be something else to it, you know. And if you just want to make music and just put it out there, much respect for that too, you know. But I think there's... For me, I just have a huge passion for these songs that I want the whole world to hear them, you know, I really do. Whether you like it or don't like it, I want a reaction, positive or negative, and I just want everyone to hear it. That's it, you know, and that's how sort of our ethos sort of is of how we try and approach things, of what can we do? What can we do to maybe... someone will hear us and get further into deathcore or death metal and end up loving Cannibal Corpse and sort of grow out of us. That's fine. As long as we could help them make that transition or maybe find something they like about it in the guitars or the vocals or whatever, and be able to get so into this music. Cause I think this scene, the underground scene, has so much to offer that people just miss out on because they don't want to, you know, push it that far with it.
Speaking of masks, that makes me think about merch, which I would imagine is probably a fairly important part of your business, and you run a merch company. Can you talk about kind of how you guys approach that?
Yeah, obviously we were, to be honest, because of the international thing, money and revenue is pretty much vital for us to be able to tour.
Meaning that your travel costs and visas and all that stuff are a lot higher, yeah.
the expenses. I mean, take a US band, and you've got a market you can tour and hit without visas and flights realistically. And then you've got Europe and Asia and all this. Whereas for the guys, they just really have Russia, and there's not much money there, and they're great shows, but it's very hard to make it work. So for us to generate the revenue to cover the expenses, to start a tour, just to get them here and get in the van with a full tank of gas is expensive. So
you've spent thousands of dollars on visas and flights and stuff before the first show.
Yeah. Yeah. And we spend it months in advance as well. That's the other difficulty I don't think many people talk about, is it's not, a week before the tour, it's like 6 months. You don't know if we've missed tours because we don't get them in time. And then the money's gone down the drain. And it's just for us, when we started approaching these merch stores to help do merch, it's just the cuts were just insane. Like, a $15 t-shirt and we're getting like $3 or whatever, is just crazy. And
yeah, we sold 100 shirts and we made $300. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. And so I just thought, this can't be right, And so I started doing merch for us, and I was like, okay, we'll cut out the middleman. And then I sort of started looking into printing costs. Okay, I'm realizing the company I'm using is also outsourcing here. All right, let's cut out as many middlemen as we can to get to what is the absolute minimum cost for a good quality t-shirt, and to ship it and to sell it, and what should the band get, and what should, I get for my time in it. And, and we have a lot of pride at Rise and Merch. We take a lot of pride of being able to pay bands a lot more. And a lot of bands will say that, they'll even say, like, even though we're a smaller company and we're based in the UK, they'll just say, we just make so much more money, and I just want to help fund their album. That's it. I just want to help. I want them to say, thanks to, this company, we managed to get, someone else to mix it that might have been a little bit more expensive, or start their tour on time with no problems, or pay off a van debt, or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's interesting how many merch companies do outsource almost everything, and their role is to kind of be the project manager, which is, that's okay. But like you said, there's a lot of, I guess I would say, inefficiency in there, because they're paying 30% to their printer and then marking up 30% and all that. And it's just a lot of waste.
Yeah. Oh, it's massive. And I even say, like, to the guys in the band, sort of drummer and bassist, when they say to me, like, they want more money and music, I just say, just pick up a job that we're paying someone to do, tour managing or even driving a van or whatever, we'll happily budget for you to do it instead of paying someone else. And now you've got money in your pocket. There's jobs in the music industry. You've just got to go and get them. And yeah. And especially with merch at the moment and designs, you've seen a lot of people become designers, and bands need a lot of stuff to make it happen, accountants and all this, and just pick up a couple of things here and there. You've saved yourself thousands a year, and you're paying yourself a good, a good wage for it.
So how many people are you working with? How many artists are you working with aside from Slaughter?
We're working with about 30, but we've sort of very lucky to have grown to this point where we can sort of work with the bands we want to. We'll hear a band and just sounds inspiring, and even if they're not popular, we'll try and help them. We'll offer them, we've paid for sort of flights for bands to come over and, recoup it. We've even helped bands with debt just to recoup through their sales and try and, I want to be a tool for the bands and for the artists to use us, almost like getting a loan from a bank, and just help us promote the merch, help us sell it. And we'll handle the rest, and we'll make sure, you're on tour and you're getting opportunities, or you're not stressing about debt because, you didn't sell as much as you thought or whatever it is. That's all we want to take that sort of off their mind and actually help them.
It's interesting that it really is kind of like a bank in that way, but a bank would, probably not ever give them a loan like you would. Well, it's not really a loan, but an advance, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And to be fair, that's sort of what we take pride in, and that's what I want to, as it grows, I want to offer that more, with every sort of band we take on that ends up being successful and all that, we want to reinvest that money back into the scene.
Well, I'm looking at your shelves full of stuff here. One of the things that I'm always interested in with merch is demand forecasting, because it's so hard to know what's going to sell and what sizes and all that kind of stuff. How do you approach that? Like, so let's say you're working with a new band and nobody really knows kind of what's going to sell. How do you think about that?
So I look into, first of all, what sort of genre, what niche, you know, because I think straight off the bat, there's just certain niches where it's just, there's a merch culture for it. You know, we started working with band Tsunami from California.
Oh man, I bet they're a merch machine.
Yeah, they're great.
Not a big band, but I bet they sell a shitload of merch for how small they are.
Amazing. Amazing. So for that, we do try and go, right, let's take a little bit more of a risk, you know, and obviously the prices come down so massively. But what I also try and do is allow like a small period, especially with the actual printers that we get the shirts off, like we'll have like a quite quick turnaround with them. So we try and give like an extra week or so, just get a feel, you know, and then if there's one that's selling a bit slower, we can sort of reduce it and try and fix that. And if there's one selling way more, then there's still time to be able to put more on the order. You know, I think especially with COVID, to see the sales of bands really go through the roof because fans still want to support them, we've been able to print such high quantities and the price just drops so dramatically. And you know, and we even try, and sometimes if we get a new band, we even get a new shelving unit in just for them. We're like, right, let's fill this shelving out with them, let's see what we do, let's put what we've got into it, let's see what a band play with or whatever. And there's never been, you know, there's been sometimes where it's been a bit slower, but we've never been like, you know, all right, that's you know, been absolutely awful.
Never really ate shit on a design.
We have a couple. I'm not going to say which ones. A couple questionable designs. Definitely took a lot longer, you know, maybe a year.
But nobody knows. I mean, sometimes the one that you think is going to be a complete piece of shit does really well, and the one that you love doesn't sell. It's just, you never really know.
Yeah, oh, for sure. You know, what surprised me is my business partner, she started doing some more sort of, I guess you want to call it women's friendly, but it's not. Uh-huh. It's just like pink shirts. And like we did like a Hello Kitty rip called Hell Kitty. And and she comes up with all these ideas. And at first I was a little bit like, is it going to work or not? And some of them just work so good because everyone just wants a black shirt. But do they really, you know, until you show them a death metal logo with hearts on it, on a pink long sleeve. And then they realize, actually, you know, that is unique and that is cool. And especially, you know, we get a lot more sort of women customers and stuff that come to the store knowing they can get something a little bit better than just the album cover. And I mean, for us personally, the album cover T-shirts and the sort of bog standard ones are the harder ones to push. They really are at the moment.
That's interesting. I've always found that just like the logo, you know, on a black shirt tends to do the best, but you're saying there's maybe a little bit too much of that.
Yeah, I think so. I do think so. I think like sometimes it can work great, but the sort of riskier ones sort of been working best for us, to be fair. I mean, for sure.
You know, now that you mention it, I've done some kind of wacky stuff with my YouTube merch, and that stuff has done better than I expected it to. You know, when I do something funny and clever that I'm like, well, people will like this on Instagram, but they're not going to buy it. But they did buy it. So, I mean, maybe, you know, maybe people want different stuff now.
Yeah, for sure. You know, Drain, the band Drain.
Mm-hmm.
And they just did like a summer line with like a beach towel, like a cooler, all of that stuff, which I think you would have never seen 5 years ago. And now it just looks, you know, it just looks like it's sold out great and, you know, just really creative again with the merch.
Yeah. Have you thought about completely vertically integrating and buying like presses and stuff?
We have, but it's definitely much harder than, you know, than it seems. And what we wanted to do, we were very close to doing that about a year and a half ago. And then COVID hit and we sort of took a step back and we were sort of like, okay, you know, there's sort of a lot of risk to that. I mean, I'm seeing print shops go, you know, go bust all over the place in UK and in Europe. And right now we have a great supplier that, you know, the guy there, the print manager is, again, a huge fan of the music, wants to help the artist. And right now we're talking about actually sort of doing a lot more of each other in that sense, investment and sort of trying to return the favor and something in that sense, you know. But I think it's much harder than right now than what people seem because of such big merch companies taking such a cut and demanding such low prices. It's just, it's sort of just that greed has just sort of bled into I think music merchandise too much right now, and that's sort of what we're trying to change.
So what's the hard part? Just that shit is really expensive, or tell me about that.
Yeah, labor cost.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I see.
Yeah, so there's huge, like, a huge labor cost, especially in the UK. Like, property and rental prices here are just absurd, you know, with taxes and everything. And at the end of the day, what you're going to be making back isn't always worth it in that sense, you know?
Maybe you can print your shit in Russia.
We've tried. Yeah, we've definitely tried. We have. I mean, it's, yeah, again, it's like, it's a difficult one because especially in Europe, like countries like Germany are just so good at it with the manufacture.
Right.
And are so competitive that they're even more competitive. Some suppliers that, you know, that we work with than in Russia, than in China. Because,
oh, wow.
You know, and it's because, I mean, some of these merch companies, I won't say what company, but they have, again, a huge company worth millions that is just, you know, offsetting all their merch printing to a company, and they're paying something crazy like 16p per print, or I guess it'd be like,
wow,
20 cents a print.
Yeah.
And I've heard that a lot of the print shops are just so close to going under because they just, you can't make it pay.
You can't compete with that. Yeah. Does Brexit change things for you as far as importing, getting stuff in and out of the country? It seems like that is a whole other layer of bullshit and cost now.
Yeah. Brexit has, for sure. I mean, it's made things very, very difficult just getting it in. There's extra costs. I it's a bit of a strange one over here because the sort of media isn't really talking about the extra costs. It's meant to be this whole amazing thing with no extra costs of this deal, but there really is. And we've seen some stuff.
I mean, the customs situation is totally different now, right?
Yeah. And it just takes, it can taste, it sometimes it's smooth and it will take a day. Sometimes it will take 2 months.
Right.
And it just can't tell because it's so new.
And that's hard for you in particular because of a band. I mean, not now, but very soon they're going to need stuff for tour. And you can't have something hung up in customs for a month if the tour is in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Funny enough, that's pretty much a project I'm working on at the moment is I've been putting together a solution where if a band tours, they don't have to worry and there'll be merch for them in the UK and for them in Europe at the same cost, and they won't have to travel the border.
Oh, nice. So then they don't have to pay tariffs and whatnot to get things through.
You know, it just, I'm not too sure what's going to happen. That's the thing, obviously, with COVID, but it sounds like it's going to be absolute mayhem trying to get across the border with any kind of goods on you.
Right. Well, I don't know if anybody tuned into this expecting to hear about customs, but it's important. Like, you got to think about this shit. This is business. And, you know, if you're in a band or if you're selling merch, that's, you're running a small business, and this is the kind of detailed shit that you have to think about, because that's the difference between potentially not having merch on your tour or not, you know. And if you don't have merch on tour, you're probably gonna lose your ass.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it even gets a little bit trickier because, I mean, you let's say you've got a nightliner, a big bus of bands all coming across the border. Does everyone have their visas? Does everyone have everything they need? You know, at the end of the day, now you need a working permit. They're not going to let you over, you know, with a tourist permit or anything like that. You've got to have so much paperwork and everything sorted now, you know, for a bus of maybe 20 guys that before you did
right.
it was never a thought about if you're going to make it through, and no one's been able to test it either. We still have all these tours planned and sort of just waiting quite nervously to see what's going to happen with it all.
There's going to be some interesting shit where, you know, the drummer didn't fill out his paperwork right, and at the last minute, it turns out he can't go on tour, and what are they going to do?
Exactly. And I guess you guys have a slightly similar one with Canada, right? Like, a lot of times a certain member won't be able to get across. I mean, what's that sort of like then?
Well, I'm not in a band, so I can't say for sure, but I mean, it's the same thing. The difference is that, you know, there's, If you can't play Vancouver or Toronto, that's not going to ruin your whole tour. Like, nobody just tours Canada.
Okay.
You know, so it'd be like, let's say you couldn't play France. Well, that sucks. You had 3 shows in France. Can't play those shows. That sucks. But it's not going to ruin you. Whereas, you know, if somebody fucks up their paperwork and can't get into anywhere in Europe, that's a much bigger problem.
Yeah. No, for sure.
Well, but it happens all the time. And Canada's a lot more strict than other countries. For example, if you have, like, if you get caught drunk driving 5 years ago, they might not let you in.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah, they're super strict. Or, you know, like a guy I know, to make a long story short, legally had a gun on him and he was wrongly arrested for it. They dropped the charges. Nothing, like, he didn't do anything wrong, and Canada still won't let him in because of it. You know, or people like Ronnie Radke. I strongly doubt Ronnie can get into Canada. I mean, because he's a felon.
Yes, that's crazy. I mean, we've not really spoken about this, to be honest, but we've been having a lot of problem with shows in Russia getting cancelled due to the police. I mean, I was just got off the phone just before this with our vocalist, with Alex, and we've got a tour planned for September, and half the shows have just been cancelled by the police have come in. They've said that we support, I think it's propaganda of like, not terrorism, but propaganda of violence and all of this, and they took all the lyrics and everything, and there've been like protests, but the band just we just had a tour like a couple weeks back.
Can you just bribe them?
Honestly, it's kind of terrifying when I hear Alex
sure.
about it, because he was telling me that the cross we use like a Orthodox crucifix sort of thing, like Orthodox Christian one inverted, and he was saying that someone in his town was sort of mocking the church and did a similar thing, and he's now doing 3 years in prison.
Wow.
And we're touring Russia, you know, and their big shows, the Moscow show was, I think it was about 3,000 people. And
I'm sure. Yeah. I bet the Russians fucking love you guys.
Yeah, it's wild. It's crazy. And then to see these shows, you know, to see obviously this reaction, it's sort of reminiscent of what happened to Behemoth in Poland. And, but the sort of difference is the police have pretty much actively told our tour manager, like, we don't want any problems with this, you know, keep this to yourself. You aren't playing, you're not welcome literally in this town. That's it. You know, if you don't cause any problems for us, we're not going to cause problems for you, and just leave it. And luckily when I was talking to Alex, you know, I was saying I was about to do this, and I say that, you know, I'll probably speak about it. And he was just like, it's fine. They won't understand you,
but yeah, right.
He's, you know, sort of kept his mouth sort of shut with
sure.
because it's just like, you know, with family and everything, and especially from the UK, hearing that is just, it's wild. It is wild.
Yeah, it's easy to forget that, you know, people in Russia and China and, you know, other places with essentially communist dictatorships don't have freedom of speech, and they play by different rules than we do.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. It really is. And especially, I think, for Russia, it still feels like Europe, you know, because of the location and obviously with Eastern Europe and these kind of in the EU like Poland. And
but it's not Europe.
No, it's not. Yeah, it's just an entirely different place. And, you know, and I don't know the situation. I don't know how to handle those sort of things. And, you know, and Alex is now trying to find out what he can do to sort of protect him and his family and still try and just play music at the end of the day. You know, that's it.
Yeah. Wow.
It's crazy.
That's wild. Well, I hope you guys sort all that out. Yeah, well, I've taken up enough of your time. I want to let you get on with your day, especially because it's evening for you. Anything else you want to mention or promote or words of wisdom to leave the kids with?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, new album, Costellum, drops August the 13th, Friday the 13th. And just definitely, I mean, if anyone's listening that is in a band, just be creative. You know, that's it. And it, like we just spoke about, it doesn't need to be just music. Visuals, how you run your social media, how you do anything can have a twist. Even merch, do something creative and you have a whole brand that you can build and play with. It doesn't need to be just music. And at the end of the day, as long as you're having fun with it and it's crazy and just do what you want to do. You know, the world is yours if you want to go take it.
Well said. All right, my friends, that does it for this episode of the podcast. If you made it this far, thank you. Thank you for listening. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. If you want to help the show, there's a couple things that you can do. First of all, share it on social media. If you share it, tag us, tag Finn McKenty, that's me, and tag Deanna Chapman, that's a producer. Second thing you can do, if you really, really, really love us and really want to support us, you can support us on Patreon. There's a link to that in the show notes. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening to this, or you can do none of that. And you can just sit at home, think about how awesome this podcast is. That works too. Again, thank you very much to each and every one of you for listening. We sincerely appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.
Hey, this is Aaron from No Simple Road. I'm inviting you to come hang out with Apple, Mel, and I as we talk with the musicians, artists, chefs, authors, and beyond from the world that turns us on. We're reaching into the improvisational music scene, the psychedelic culture, the festival world, and getting to know what makes the people tick that create those scenes. Come join us on the long, strange trip over at No Simple Road.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.